KTOO Public Media would like to acknowledge the Tlinéidh Dí of the Ak Kwan. We are on their ancestral homeland. Our broadcast studios are built on fill that was once tideland and part of what is called the Indian Village. We recognize those families who regarded the tidelands as a source of food and part of their home, who maintained smokehouses on the tidelands, and who parked their boats in the harbor. The families of the Juneau Indian Village, like their ancestors, cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront. KTOO is working to lift up Tlingit voices through the sharing of stories like these and the broadcast of the Tlingit language. Please excuse us for our mistakes and gunas chish for your patience as we learn. This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Most people don't think of math as a language, but our next guest speaks it fluently. Dr. Megan Busby is this week's presenter in the UAS Evening at Egan Lecture Series. She'll give a talk this Friday night about how math can be a powerful tool to describe the world around us. Hello, Dr. Busby.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. You're an associate professor of mathematics at UAS. How did you first get into math?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I had a really great few teachers when I was in junior high school and high school. And I remember the first proof that I saw about the quadratic formula, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's so cool. So that's sort of, I guess, where it started.
A lot of people are intimidated by math, as I'm sure you know, and by math classes. What's it like to teach it at the university level?
It's pretty interesting. I think one of the nice things about UAS for me is that I get to teach a range of classes. So I teach beginning algebra, some calculus classes, and then upper division math classes. So it's interesting for me to be able to teach a variety of things. I definitely see all the students that also are still scared about math. And I think that's a big part of my job, is I try to figure out how to relax them about math, but also to challenge them. And hopefully I'm there when they're rewarded with understanding new concepts, or, oh yeah, I can do math. And so that's kind of what I look forward to, I guess.
Your presentation this Friday is called The Quote Unquote Real World from One Mathematician's Point of View. What is implied by the real world?
Mathematical modeling is one of the classes that I teach. It's also the topic that I studied when I was in graduate school. And from that perspective, it's sort of an interdisciplinary field where you're thinking about mathematics and how it can be used to describe phenomena kind of anywhere. And I ended up studying it with ecology, biology, mostly life sciences, but also physics. So it's kind of real in the sense that you try to take all of the variables that are out there and try to reduce it down to something that's quantifiable, to something that is simple enough that you can actually extract information from it. When you think about all the variables that go into, are you going to, is the population going to increase tomorrow by 7%, by 1%? There's way more variables that we can think of, and even the ones that we can think of, it's hard to quantify them. And so it's sort of the real world because we try to apply mathematics to the real world, but we also recognize that it's not everything. It's just a simplified component that can be used to help make decisions.
I see. Maybe you'll touch on this later, but I feel like we're starting to talk about the difference of like qualitative analysis and quantitative analysis, or qualitative data and quantitative data. I've always been more on the qualitative side,
sure.
But I've also always felt that you can't have one without the other.
I agree. I think that's one of the things I like about math, but just interdisciplinary. It's also a thing I like about UAS is that it's so small that I get to interact with people that work in all different fields. And even though my math specialty doesn't necessarily work in some applications, it's really interesting to know that some of the faculty here are using different math tools. There's graph theory is one that's sort of a network idea where you can think about individuals and how they interact with each other. And that's that depends on sort of your location or the number of relationships that you have. So it's sort of a mathematical structure that's different than the types of things that I deal with, which are more continuous equations, that you think about it sort of as an average understanding of individuals. So everybody sort of has the same properties, and you make that kind of assumption, which means you're only going to get a certain type of information out of it. So.
Well, you recently spent some time in the real world outside of academia. You have recently returned from a sabbatical, and you had a big project to work on during that time. What was your intention for the sabbatical, and did you fulfill it?
Yeah. So I put in an application at UAS to get the sabbatical and was granted it in December of 2019. And so I wasn't quite prepared for 2020 to be what it was, like everybody else. So my real world was sort of an office spare room of my friends in Wisconsin. But my proposal was to write an open access textbook for the mathematical modeling course that I teach and my friend and co-author also teaches. And so the textbook idea is just because math modeling can have so many different resources that it's nice to be able to collect them all into one one book or one resource. And so that was the main goal. The other goal was specifically to write it as an open access textbook, which I will talk more about in the talk, but open access is a movement that's been started, I think, about 14 years ago, worldwide, really, of trying to increase the information transparency in research in particular. So you've got, and also just to account for the cost that sometimes makes it hard for people to get exposure to information. So one of the examples with research is just, for example, faculty often work for public universities that are paid for by tax dollars in some amount. And then those faculty publish their results in journals that often require a subscription fee to gain access to. And so they're, you know, people are sort of doubly paying for it. Where I use open access is where I came into it is with educational materials, right? So textbooks at the university, I'm the one that picks out what they are. And I remember the differential equations book that I wanted to use cost $300. And it was just like, you know, and it wasn't even upper division math. It was like, oh, well, maybe this is more tricky and they should be more expensive. But it was even elementary algebra was a book that cost $200. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really big problem. And students are having to decide, should I get my books or should I get a meal plan at the university? You know, so open access textbooks are books that are authored by professors, and then they're just provided. There's a couple of different sites that you can access it, but it's free, and you can get a PDF or you can, you know, print it for $20 or $30. But, you know, and it takes a while for the quality to be as good as a textbook quality that's been published, and a lot of time has been put into that. So it takes a little while or the outcome to be comparable, but it's a good thing to be a part of and try to make it better for our students to be able to go to school and not worry so much about at least that aspect of the cost.
Well, from a user standpoint, I super appreciate open source information, resources, software programs, all of that, textbooks. What are some challenges of working with that format for you on the creator end?
On the creator end. I think that the challenge is I like physical documents, I guess is my first thing, is I would much rather have pages to flip through and navigate between things. So that's what I personally like. As far as creating a document, it's just a lot of computer time. I like the variability of getting up and walking around, teaching and sitting and preparing and talking. And but also I think the technology piece of trying to create a figure or a picture that is trying to explain what you mean in words. So I can draw them quite easy when I'm up, you know, on the chalkboard or something, but to, you know, different programs. There's different software programs to create a different diagram and then trying to make it all compatible. I think that's probably been a challenge for me.
Your talk is this Friday via Zoom, 7 p.m. Evening of Eager Lecture Series. You can go online to uas.alaska.edu/EaganLecture to register and get the link. What can the audience expect when they attend your lecture on Friday? What are some of the things you'll be sharing?
Yeah, so on Friday, I will talk a little bit more about just what is a sabbatical, how does it work? It's different kind of for different faculty or different types of faculty and what you study. So it's just my perspective about what that is. I'll talk a little bit more about open access. It's International Open Access Week. So that's kind of a nice component. And then I'll throw in some math because you may as well. So I'm going to talk about probably a couple examples of a mathematical model. And I think my topic is going to be about bees foraging for nectar. And so I'll talk a little bit about that and a little bit of the math. So if I think it should be understandable and interesting, even if you don't follow the math bits of it. But if you like a little math, a little calculus, that might be fun as well.
It might be.
It's possible.
No, I think that sounds really interesting. Very intriguing stuff. I like the example that you're using with the honeybees. Well, thank you so much for giving us a look at the world from a mathematical perspective. Is there anything else you'd like to share about yourself, your sabbatical, your book, or your talk?
There's not a whole lot else. I think that the recording for the Zoom lecture will also be available after the talk. So you can go to the Evening at Egan website and get that afterwards. I am grateful to have had a sabbatical. It was a pretty incredible year for folks that stayed here and taught, you know, online in all different formats. So it is a pretty great thing to have. And the cost kind of works out pretty evenly for the university. So that was also helpful to know in the times that we're in currently. So I'm happy to also take questions on Friday if people have other questions or they're curious about different models. So if you want to show up for the Zoom part, that would be great. I studied some disease modeling, population dynamics when I was in graduate school. So there's a little bit of that that I know something about. I like all sorts of math and topics and applications, and I probably don't know even close to it all, but I like the conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Megan Busby, Associate Professor of Mathematics at UAS. She will be taking questions at her presentation Friday night, live streamed via Zoom at 7 o'clock. Free, but you do have to register online, uas.alaska.edu/EaganLecture. Dr. Busby, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Shelley.
I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It's not always easy for students to make meaningful connections with employers, especially these days during COVID. But the University of Alaska Southeast hopes to open the door for students with its fall career fair, a virtual portal, so to speak. Joining us now is Deborah Reidman, Career Services Coordinator for the University of Alaska Southeast. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Shelley. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm having a little deja vu. I'm pretty sure we talked about this same event about 6 months ago, and it was virtual then as well. So you've got it all dialed in for this time, right?
Correct.
But let's back up. Tell me a little bit about what you do as Career Services Coordinator and some of the post-college employment resources that are available for students.
Yeah, absolutely. So as the Career Services Coordinator at UAS, I work with students and alumni when it comes to all things job search related. Work with resumes, cover letters, interview practice. And especially in a virtual world, we have to kind of readjust a few things to make sure that we're doing that effectively. And then also just job search, career changes. I've been in employment services for over 15 years, working with high school students up through adults. And I'm truly in my dream job. And it's been really a pleasure and an honor to work with our students and our alumni. And honestly, the virtual aspect has opened up new doors for us. It seems like I have a broader reach as a result of this. So there are some pluses.
Would you say your office is pretty successful with connecting graduates to jobs?
You know, I think so. We've got some really good partnerships with our employers here. We have a job fair that occurs typically, you know, in normal circumstances in February, and we always have very enthusiastic employers, and then our students are able to connect with them there. And then we have a new platform called Handshake that has been amazing. And what it's done is it's connected all University of Alaska students from all three campuses, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Southeast, with employers. And so a lot of our local employers are getting on board. And so they have a broader reach for students who are, for example, living in Juneau, but attending UAA or UAF. And so that's something new that we just started, and it's been probably about 2 years in the making.
The Fall Virtual Career Fair is tomorrow. It's Wednesday, October 27th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. So how does it work?
So how it works, students and Cinema alumni have been receiving emails from On Handshake about how to get registered for the fair and sign up for sessions. So students and alumni and anybody who has attended UAS, we would love to have you join us, and you can sign up the day of the fair, which is tomorrow. And so just go to uas.alaska.edu, and in the top right-hand search field, just type in career services. And then once you get to the career services main page, on the left-hand side, you'll find a link for the UA 2021 Virtual Fall Career Fair. And by going to that page, there'll be a link to register. And there's also a link for a guide to help students with any questions they have about setting up sessions with on the career fair, as well as registering. And so we've got everything set up for them step by step with some videos in case they need some assistance, and also how to prepare effectively for the career fair. So that's all they need to do is just once they get to that page, they should have everything that they need.
Now, you've mentioned this is for students, it's for current students, for graduating students, and for alumni. Is that about the main target group there?
Yeah, correct. And in fact, anybody who's taken a class at UAS, we would welcome you to join us, because Career Services is available to alumni and students for the remainder of their vocational life. So a lot of times, people go through career changes. And so if they have attended UAS, then they can reach out to Career Services, and I'd be more than happy to work with them. But this is a really great opportunity to see who's out there. And we have 97 employers attending.
That's so crazy. When you submitted the form, you only had 60. So that number's gone up a lot.
Exactly. Yeah, our employer registration ended last week, and so we picked up quite a few. And then right now, as of today, we have 378 students that are registered.
Wow. Well, that's great. It sounds like you're going to have a really good turnout. But there's so I had a question if there was still time to sign up if you're an employer, but it sounds like that door is closed. Yeah.
Yeah. Not
too late now.
Not for this year. Yeah. Exactly.
Have to get on.
We'll have more.
Yeah. Maybe they can contact you for the next time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about Handshake. How does that work? What are interactions like?
The platform is very, it's user-friendly, and it is also very professional looking, and the ease of access for students and alumni as they go in and they are looking for employers, looking for jobs, internships. So it's very clear. It's very, like I said, visually pleasing, which has been really, really great. And we just love the usability of it. It's very easy to navigate. And so we're encouraging all of our employers to post positions. And so students can actually do a search for positions that are located in Juneau or for a particular employer to see what's going on. Another bonus is at the employer's page, there are examples of students and alumni who have worked for that employer. And so if you're on Handshake, you can message one of those past employees and find out a little bit more about their experience. So there's lots of good networking opportunities for students to do with people within their degree field, for alumni, for people within their professional field. So it's just an added resource for students to be able to connect in a way that they haven't been able to connect with on other platforms. And it's used across the country by, oh my gosh, hundreds of thousands of other campuses. So it's a very popular platform.
Is Handshake the platform that also hosts the virtual forum, the job fair?
Yes, yes.
So they enter. Sorry, go ahead. I'm just I'm trying to picture how it actually works. If I'm signing on, what am I going to see?
Yeah, good point. So students and alumni, they can sign up for either a 30-minute information session, or they can also sign up for 10-minute one-on-one sessions. And so the fair runs from 11 o'clock until 3 p.m. And so, you know, even if you're an alumni and you want to jump in during your lunch hour, then you can check out some employers that you might want to sit in on an information session or set up a one-on-one session. So once you get to the actual webpage for the registration for the career fair, it'll encourage you to sign up for sessions. And so then you will peruse the different employers and what kinds of sessions they have available, and then sign up for those that would work with your schedule. And so it's actually pretty easy. There's also kind of a guide on the right-hand side of your registration form that lets you know, okay, here are the, you know, you signed up for this group session and you signed up for these one-on-one sessions. So you don't have to remember them. It's all ready for you to make sure that you know which ones are coming up. And the other thing that's interesting about Handshake is it works very similar to Zoom. It's got, you know, the camera, and students and alumni can also keep their camera on or keep their camera off if they want. But you can't utilize a virtual background. So you have to be mindful of what your background looks like, because like in Zoom, you put on a virtual background. In the Handshake platform, you can't. So you know, you might just want to keep your camera off if you want, if you're just there for information gathering, so to speak. But if you're looking for employment, then it would be good to dress professional from the waist up and check your background, make sure, just like anybody going on film camera, like the noise, mute yourself if you have any noise going on. So the same kind of thing, like we're getting very comfortable with Zoom and other platforms with those kinds of things.
Very good tip. Thank you for that, Deborah. Good reminder. All right. So again, the virtual fair is tomorrow, the Wednesday, October 27th, starts at 11 a.m., goes till 3 p.m., and you can sign up at the website. Is that the UAS website, I believe you said? There's a link there. Great. If you're interested in attending as a job seeker. Deborah Reidman, anything else before we say goodbye today?
No, I would just encourage people to go check it out. Again, go to uas.alaska.edu. In the top right-hand corner of the field, search field, type in Career Services. And then once you get to the main Career Services webpage, then click on the UA 2021 Virtual Fall Career Fair. Go ahead and register. You can register today and tomorrow, the day of the fair, and then peruse the different employers, and then go ahead and register and set up a session for some of those that you might be interested in. So we would love to have you there. So please consider participating.
It sounds like a fun and valuable way to spend your day tomorrow. Well, thank you so much for answering all my questions, Deborah Reidman. Thanks for organizing the virtual career fair for all of our students out there. And I hope it goes well.
Thank you very much. We hope so too.
Have a great afternoon.
Okay, thanks.
When we come back, we'll talk with the playwright of Voyager 1, a play that ponders the following question: which song would you choose to represent all of humanity? But next, for those of you who miss Sounds Wild during Morning Edition, we wanted to let you know you can now hear it on Juno Afternoon. This is Garden Spider. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. It's been a long time since Perseverance Theater has been able to perform in front of an in-person audience, but they are back this weekend with a new play. Here with me now is the playwright of Voyager 1, Jared Michael Delaney. No relation. Hi, Jared.
Hi.
And in the
Thanks
studio,
for having me.
Yeah, and in the studio, Aaron Tripp, one of the actors. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
All right. Well, it's great to have everybody here today. Jared, let's start with you. Would you tell me about your play and what inspired you to write it?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to. Thanks again for having me on. The play was inspired by a couple of events that happened sort of simultaneously. The Voyager 1 spacecraft, which was launched in 1977, happened to leave our solar system and became the first man-made interstellar object. I happened to read an article about that. And then at the same time, I happened to read another article about the Golden Record, which is on Voyager 1, which is this collection of sound and music and greetings and so forth and so on. And in that article, it was suggested that Chuck Berry is going to end up being sort of the definitive voice of rock and roll music for all time, because, for many reasons, but one of them being because he's the only rock and roll song on the Golden Record, Johnny B. Goode, and that it will be spinning out into eternity, and it won't even reach another star for 40,000 years. So I happened to read those two articles at the same time, like within a like a week of each other, in two different magazines, and it just really struck me. So that started the genesis of the idea for this play.
What song would you choose for the Golden Record?
Oh man, that is a one rock and roll song. If I can only take one.
I don't know what the rules were, but I guess if you could only choose one song, what would it be?
Yeah, if you can only choose one song, I guess my personal favorite all-time single favorite rock and roll song is Dear Prudence by the Beatles. Mm-hmm. So maybe I would take Dear Prudence, I guess.
What about you, Aaron?
You know, I had a feeling you would be asking this, and so I thought about it all day, and I have nothing, but I would love if something Alaska Native was on it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a Stephen Blanchett.
Oh, yeah. Good
that
choice.
Would be great.
Good
Thank
choice.
You.
Don't ask me mine. I have not had all this time to think about it, but you all have been working on the play and rehearsing and getting ready for the premiere this Friday. Jared, Perseverance Theater first encountered your Voyager 1 at the Valdez Theater Conference. How did it come to Perseverance?
That's a great question. So this involves another Delaney.
right. Frank, also no relation.
Yeah, also no relation to any of us. when I came to the Valdez Theater Conference this past summer, I was rooming with Frank Delaney, who is the managing director of Perseverance. And when I walked in, we introduced ourselves and obviously made a comment about having the same last name and that we must be related somewhere down the line, as perhaps Shelley, you and I are somewhere down the line. Who knows?
Perhaps.
Perhaps so. But anyway, he said, oh, are you the author of Voyager 1? And I said, yeah, how did you know that? And so anyway, he told me that the literary manager of Perseverance had come across my play. And so I said, well, let me send you the newest draft and the most recent draft of the play. And he took that, Frank took that for me and then brought it back to Perseverance. And I think it was just a couple of months later, maybe not even, they gave me a call and said, hey, we're interested in producing it. So I mean, I'm thrilled. I'm just thrilled and honored that they offered to do that. It's very exciting.
One of the themes of the show is non-biased historical understanding. How is that, or is it, reflected in our world today?
Wow, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure how well it is reflected today, but I think it's something we are, hopefully, a lot of us anyway, are actively striving for, something we're working towards. I think that's a noble endeavor. So I hope we can do more of that.
Aaron, turning to you now, I know you've remained active in theater productions online throughout the pandemic, but what's it been like for you to return to the live stage?
It's been pretty amazing, of course. It feels like, because it's been, 2 years now, it was feeling like, just like getting back on the bike, and we're all back in the space and able to work together again. The virtual stuff was really fun, but it is harder because you're missing the same connection and you have to turn your living room into your set and be your own costume designer and stuff. So this has been nice to feel the collaborative community again.
Tell me a little bit about your character. You're one of only three players in this production, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the play goes between two time periods, so I'm playing two characters. One, her name is Sarah, and is in the 70s and is working at NASA. on the Golden Record, and then a character in the future, a future way past our current timeline, that is just called Woman and is a mysterious figure, and I can't describe without spoiling it.
it seems like this play was sort of ready-made for the gradual return of live productions because there are just three characters. One, I understand, is kind of off stage mm-hmm. most of the time, and so there's not a lot of people on stage. What are some other COVID mitigation measures you've each had to take as you have prepared to premiere?
Well, Jared's been on Zoom a couple of times.
Right. So Jared, you're not in Alaska?
Great COVID mitigation.
I am not in Alaska.
That helps as well.
Calling in from Philly, PA, Philly, okay. Pennsylvania, Philadelphia.
I bet you're on Alaska time, though, this month.
in the rehearsal room, we have to do a temperature check every time we come into the space and answer a series of questions about symptoms and if we've had contact with anyone and if we have had to be tested recently. We wear masks while we rehearse unless we are in a scene, and if we're in a scene, everyone else has to be 10 feet away. So we've felt very taken care of in that respect.
Did you know much about Voyager 1 before this play? Are you a sci-fi fan?
You know, I do love sci-fi. I didn't know anything about Voyager 1, though. So this has been really cool. And I also, to be honest, didn't know that much about 70s music. So I was like joking. I was like, this is actually a historical fiction play because I wasn't even born then.
Well, Voyager 1 opens this Friday, runs for 3 weeks. There's more information and tickets at ptalaska.org.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. But what do audience need to know if they plan to attend? I understand that it is pretty strict for in-person attendance. There's limited seating. There's some screening stuff.
Audience members have to be vaccinated, and you do have to wear a mask during the show. And then just for people's own safety, there will be, you know, spacing. So people won't be, unless they're in the same pod, they won't be next to each other. And the front of the stage is 10 feet from the first row of the audience. So very safe.
Right. And I also understand that unless you have a ticket in advance, you won't be able to get one at the door. So you have to go online and work that all out. Don't just show up, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Great. Well, it's been lovely to talk to both of you today. Are you pretty excited about the premiere, Jared? How will you be able to watch?
I'm very excited. I'm actually coming up. I'm flying out on Thursday, so I'll be up in town for the weekend. So I'm very excited. It'll be my first time in Juneau, and excited to meet Erin in person and to see her work. And I know it's all going to be outstanding. So I'm very excited to come up.
He's also doing a talk back on Saturday after the show.
Great. That's that's very good to know.
Just announce that for him.
Cool. So the lucky audience members who attend on Saturday will get to hear from you yourself in person.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I think this sounds like a lot of fun. I think that Perseverance Theater is being as safe as it can be. And I've heard good things about the production, and I hope everyone will go and check it out. And I also understand that it will be recorded and yes. available to watch on demand at some point in the near future, like mid-November.
The recording also, they're doing a multi-camera setup, and we're going to be mic'd for the recording. So it's going to be like very PBS special. So I think people will love it. You know, I'm excited to watch it myself. So, yes.
Well, I'm sure our public media listeners will be very into that. Well, Jared, Erin, anything else before we say goodbye today? Jared, I'll let you add anything you'd like to add.
I'll just say, please come and see the show and reach out for tickets. And when you come in, just let your mind be open and travel along with us into time and space.
Oh, nice. Thanks. And nice to meet you. And what about you, Erin? You get the last word.
I get the last word. I am really excited to see everybody back in person and have a great time with you all to travel to the future and also the past. And not only that, it's a show led by two Indigenous people on stage. So I'm really excited about that, too.
That's right. We didn't even get to talk about the other Jared, Jared
the
Olin.
The other Jared, yeah. No is... relation.
Yeah. Not yet. Yeah.
thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's going to be fantastic, and I know you guys are going to have a great time, and I think the audiences are really going to enjoy it. Sounds like a very cool and very unique play, so I look forward to seeing it sometime. Thank you both
so much
for being here today.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. It's been a long time since Perseverance Theater has been able to perform in front of an in-person audience, but they are back this weekend with a new play. Here with me now is the playwright of Voyager 1, Jared Michael Delaney. No relation. Hi, Jared.
Hi.
And in the studio, Aaron Tripp, one of the actors. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
All right. Well, it's great to have everybody here today. Jared, let's start with you. Would you tell me about your play and what inspired you to write it?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to. Thanks again for having me on. The play was inspired by a couple of events that happened sort of simultaneously. The Voyager 1 spacecraft, which was launched in 1977, happened to leave our solar system and became the first man-made interstellar object. I happened to read an article about that. And then at the same time, I happened to read another article about the Golden Record, which is on Voyager 1, which is this collection of sound and music and greetings and so forth and so on. And in that article, it was suggested that Chuck Berry is going to end up being sort of the definitive voice of rock and roll music for all time, because for many reasons, but one of them being because he's the only rock and roll song on the Golden Record, Johnny B. Goode, and that it will be spinning out into eternity and it won't even reach another star for 40,000 years. So I happened to read those two articles at the same time, like within a week of each other in two different magazines, and it just really struck me. So that started the genesis of the idea for this play.
What song would you choose for the Golden Record?
Oh, man, that is a one rock and roll song. If I can only take one.
I don't know what the rules were, but I guess if you could only choose one song, what would it be?
Yeah, if you can only choose one song, I guess my personal favorite all-time single favorite rock and roll song is Dear Prudence by the Beatles. Mm. So maybe I would take Dear Prudence, I guess.
What about you, Aaron?
You know, I had a feeling you would be asking this, and so I thought about it all day, and I have nothing. But I would love if something Alaska Native was on it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a Stephen Blanchett.
Oh, yeah. Good choice.
That would be great.
Good choice. Don't ask me mine. I have not had all this time to think about it, but you all have been working on the play and rehearsing and getting ready for the premiere this Friday. Jared, Perseverance Theater first encountered your Voyager 1 at the Valdez Theater Conference. How did it come to Perseverance?
That's a great question. So this involves another Delaney.
Right, Frank, also no relation.
Yeah, also no relation to any of us. when I came to the Valdez Theater Conference this past summer, I was rooming with Frank Delaney, who is the managing director of Perseverance. And when I walked in, we introduced ourselves and obviously made a comment about having the same last name and that we must be related somewhere down the line, as perhaps Shelley, you and I are somewhere down the line. Who knows?
Perhaps.
Perhaps so. But anyway, he said, "Oh, are you the author of Voyager 1?" And I said, "Yeah. How did you know that?" And so anyway, he told me that the literary manager of Perseverance had come across my play. And so I said, "Well, let me send you the newest draft and the most recent draft of the play." And he took that. Frank took that for me and then brought it back to Perseverance. And I think it was just a couple of months later, maybe not even, they gave me a call and said, "Hey, we're interested in producing it." So I mean, I'm thrilled. I'm just thrilled and honored that they offered to do that. It's very exciting.
One of the themes of the show is non-biased historical understanding. How is that, or is it, reflected in our world today?
Wow, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure how well it is reflected today, but I think it's something we are, hopefully, a lot of us anyway, are actively striving for, something we're working towards. I think that's a noble endeavor, so I hope we can do more of that.
Aaron, turning to you now, I know you've remained active in theater productions online throughout the pandemic, but what's it been like for you to return to the live stage?
It's been pretty amazing, of course. It feels like, because it's been, 2 years now, it was feeling like, just like getting back on the bike, and we're all back in the space and able to work together again. The virtual stuff was really fun, but it is harder because you're missing the same connection and you have to turn your living room into your set and be your own costume designer and stuff. So this has been nice to feel the collaborative community again.
Tell me a little bit about your character. You're one of only three players in this production, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the play goes between two time periods, so I'm playing two characters. One, her name is Sarah, and is in the 70s and is working at NASA on the Golden Record. And then a character in the future, a future way past our current timeline, that is just called Woman and is a mysterious figure, and I can't describe without spoiling it.
it seems like this play was sort of ready-made for the gradual return of live productions because there are just three characters. One, I understand, is kind of off stage mm-hmm. most of the time, and so there's not a lot of people on stage. What are some other COVID mitigation measures you've each had to take as you have prepared to premiere?
Well, Jared's been on Zoom a couple of times.
Right. So Jared, you're not in Alaska?
Great COVID mitigation.
I am not in Alaska.
That helps as well.
Calling in from Philly, PA, Philly, okay. Pennsylvania, Philadelphia.
I bet you're on Alaska time, though, this month.
in the rehearsal room, we have to do a temperature check every time we come into the space and answer a series of questions about symptoms and if we've had contact with anyone and if we have had to be tested recently. We wear masks while we rehearse unless we are in a scene, and if we're in a scene, everyone else has to be 10 feet away. So we've felt very taken care of in that respect.
Did you know much about Voyager 1 before this play? Are you a sci-fi fan?
You know, I do love sci-fi. I didn't know anything about Voyager 1, though. So this has been really cool. And I also, to be honest, didn't know that much about 70s music. So I was like joking. I was like, this is actually a historical fiction play because I wasn't even born then.
Well, Voyager 1 opens this Friday, runs for 3 weeks. There's more information and tickets at perseverance.ptalaska.org.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. But what do audience need to know if they plan to attend? I understand that it is pretty strict for in-person attendance. There's limited seating. There's some screening stuff.
Audience members have to be vaccinated, and you do have to wear a mask during the show. And then just for people's own safety, there will be, you know, spacing. So people won't be, unless they're in the same pod, they won't be next to each other. And the front of the stage is 10 feet from the first row of the audience. So very safe.
Right. And I also understand that unless you have a ticket in advance, you won't be able to get one at the door. So you have to go online and work that all out. Don't just show up, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Great. Well, it's been lovely to talk to both of you today. Are you pretty excited about the premiere, Jared? How will you be able to watch?
I'm very excited. I'm actually coming up. I'm flying out on Thursday. So I'll be up in town for the weekend. So I'm very excited. It'll be my first time in Juneau, and excited to meet Erin in person and to see her work. And I know it's all going to be outstanding. So I'm very excited to come up.
He's also doing a talk back on Saturday after the show.
Great. That's that's very good to know.
Just announce that for him.
Cool. So the lucky audience members who attend on Saturday will get to hear from you yourself in person.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I think this sounds like a lot of fun. I think that Perseverance Theater is being as safe as it can be. And I've heard good things about the production, and I hope everyone will go and check it out. And I also understand that it will be recorded and available to watch on demand at some point in the near future, like mid-November.
The recording also, they're doing a multi-camera setup, and we're going to be mic'd for the recording. So it's going to be like very PBS special. So I think people will love it. You know, I'm excited to watch it myself. So, yes.
Well, I'm sure our public media listeners will be very into that. Well, Jared, Erin, anything else before we say goodbye today? Jared, I'll let you add anything you'd like to add.
I'll just say, please come and see the show and reach out for tickets. And when you come in, just let your mind be open and travel along with us into time and space.
Oh, nice. Thanks. And nice to meet you. And what about you, Erin? You get the last word.
I get the last word. I am really excited to see everybody back in person and have a great time with you all to travel to the future and also the past. And not only that, it's a show led by two Indigenous people on stage. So I'm really excited about that, too.
That's right. We didn't even get to talk about the other Jared.
The other Jared. Yeah. No relation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. And I know you guys are going to have a great time. And I think the audiences are really going to enjoy it. Sounds like a very cool and very unique play. So I look forward to seeing it sometime. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. It was Zach Gordon who said this when he started a club for teenagers in Juno. Quote, I believe in teenagers because among a wide variety of reasons, they are gifted with so much to contribute to the rest of us, so much that is beautiful and wise. That was 75 years ago. Today, the Zach Gordon Youth Center is a fixture in Juno, operated by the City and Borough of Juno. Joining us now to talk about this 75-year milestone is Jordan Nigro, Zach Gordon Youth Center Services Manager. Hi, Jordan.
Hi.
And Christy West, the previous Zach Gordon Youth Services Manager. Hello, Christy.
Hi, Rhonda.
I'm Shelley.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. Hi, Shelley.
Not your fault. I did not introduce myself to you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. This may be a stretch, but did either of you ever meet Zach Gordon himself? I know he died in 1977.
Christy did.
Yeah, I sure did. My family moved to Juno in 1973, and I was in high school and attended JD High. And I was taking a wood carving class, and one of the students there invited me to come to Zach Gordon to play some pool. And I was horrible at pool, so when I walked in and met Zach Gordon and then saw there was a ping pong table, I was in heaven. And I hung out at Zach Gordon the first few months that I was here in Juno. And every day I walked in, Zach would be there to greet all the students that came in and have a few words to say. If you wanted to talk, he'd listen. And if you didn't, he just kind of backed off and made you feel comfortable. And this was a really great experience for me to have Zach Gordon to go to. In a few months, I kind of got busy with activities at the high school and didn't go back as much. But when I would stop in, he was just always as welcoming as ever and always would ask, what's new? And I'd either fill him in for a while or he'd just take those few words and let me go play ping pong.
Is it true he was always in a three-piece suit?
He was. He always had his suit jacket and his tie and vest and his white shirt. And he was just a true gentleman. And as I said, he'd always greet you. And he loved to make hamburgers and fudge for everybody and did it in this little tiny kitchen. Nothing like what Jordan cooks in now.
Jordan, how did you first hear of Zach Gordon? And what do you admire about his legacy?
First learned about Zach Gordon Youth Center probably actually in high school, coming in and out of Juno a bit. I knew of the teen center, but then really I learned more about the youth center when I started working at Juno Youth Services right out of college and moved back to Juno, and a few years after that, because I used to bring kids here when I was doing that work. And at the time, Christy was not the manager, but Christy became the manager a few years into my time at JYS. And so then I met Christy, and we worked together on different projects over the years. And so I just kind of, you know, slowly learned more about Zach and who he was. And now, you know, being here, we've been, because it's the 75th anniversary, plus, you know, COVID, I think many people did a little, you know, deep dive into their closets and purging things. We've been doing that a little bit around the center also over the last year. And so we found, you know, so many great old photos and things that have been saved. And it's really fun to just dig through and see, you know, all the different things that this place has been over the years. And talking to, we have a Friends of Zach Gordon Youth Center board, which Christy is a member of. We have Renee Guerin, who also serves on that board, who was a Zach kid, used to come here all the time when Zach was alive. And so it's fun to hear those stories. People, and I'm sure this happened to Christy as well, but being here at the center, people will just walk in and be like, oh, I knew Zach Gordon, and I just wanted to stop by and tell you about this time that he married us in the backyard. Aww. You know, I mean, like, it happens all the time. Like, he was such a special person to so many people. And yeah, it's kind of amazing to think that, like, this place has been here for 75 years in different form. You know, it hasn't been in this building for 75 years, but for 75 years, there's been a place for teens and youth to go and get, you know, some support, a burger, whatever, you know. And I think that's it's a pretty fantastic thing for the community. So
I love that you can both see from old photographs and feel and experience from people coming in the spirit of his legacy carrying on in the Zach Gordon Youth Center today. That's remarkable. That's quite a legacy. So the 75th anniversary is coming up next month. What are you doing to mark the occasion?
Well, so we don't know. I don't know, to be honest, the exact month of the anniversary. We just know it was this year. And suddenly so many things have happened this year that we just did not want it to slip by and be in 2022 without really celebrating. So, so we are doing a few things over the course of the month of November. The first one was we're doing some drive-in bingo here at the Youth Center, this was another COVID discovery. Was very popular when we did it last year. So we're very excited to do that again. And the theme will be around Zach Gordon. And so so we're getting some good trivia about Zach Gordon to use in the bingo, because we threw in some trivia last time in bingo, which was pretty fun. So that is Thursday, November 4th at 6:30. And it's here, the parking lot on the side of the building. And so we are located, if you're listening and don't know where we are, it's 396 Whittier Street, which is right across from Centennial Hall and across from the across the parking lot from Centennial Hall and across the street from the State Museum. But you do have to make a reservation, and that opens Monday, November 1st at noon, and you can do that on our website. That's just because we only have so many spots for cars. But so hopefully the weather will be decent. And then we're doing some things in-house. We have a little caricature of Zach Gordon that we're going to hide around the building, and kids can find him and learn about Zach Gordon. It's going to be very hilarious through the following week. And then on the weekend of November 19th, we don't know which day yet because it will depend on the weather, we're going to do a movie in the park. And that title is to be determined, but that will be free. It's going to be super fun, and the youth here are going to pick the movie. And so we're going to do, we've been working with Alaska in Motion to do a little short film, very short film, 5-10 minutes, about Zach Gordon Youth Center and the history. And so hopefully it'll be done by then and we can show it before the movie, but we'll see. And I think there's going to be a food drive associated with that for the center and for the new youth shelter. And we have some great t-shirts that say 75th anniversary is at Gordon Youth Center. So if you bring a can of food, or we'll put out a list of things beforehand, but if you bring something, you'll get a t-shirt. So
that's great. Christy, what do you think of all that? Do you think that's a good way? Would Zach Gordon appreciate that, in your opinion?
Oh, most definitely. I think anything that celebrates youth and the Zach Gordon Youth Center, and Zach wouldn't have thought of it as being the Zach Gordon Youth Center. It was always, to him, was just a teen club. It was, you know, he came here and opened up the USO, and after 6 months of being with the servicemen, then he wanted to stay on, and he just was hooked in, and he didn't come from money himself, but he was able to find funding to celebrate whatever youth wanted to do with their careers and their future. And, you know, I think anything that celebrates youth and their advancement and progress into life, he'd be there for, and anything fun. He always kind of was this gentleman, and he kind of had the people kind of took him as being staunch, but he was a lot of fun, and he was all about people having a good time. So I'm very supportive, and I'm really excited that Jordan's pulling this off, because during COVID times, it's hard to follow through on some of these things, and she's getting her done.
Well, we are out of time, although I'd love to talk more and hear more about Zach Gordon. I encourage folks to go and read up on him. Jordan, one more time, where can we find the information for all the events?
You can follow us on Facebook. That's a great place to do it. Or you can look at cbjkids.org.
Jordan, Christy, thank you so much for coming on and sharing that today.
Thanks, Shelley.